Show the Round Table of Justice.
Welcome to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Monday morning. And as we talk about every Monday at 10 o'clock, we break down for one full hour what we call the Round Table of Justice. We invite experts in. They can be experts in the law in some way. We've had prosecutors, we've had judges, we've had criminologists, and certainly we've had police officers on the show, and we talk about a variety of different topics. The notion of traffic safety is one that we all take a keen interest in, because in some way, shape, or form, we all use the roadways, even if it's as a pedestrian. We're out on the sidewalk, we're crossing intersections. There's always a lot of questions. Understanding how the law is applied is important. And today I've got a couple of guests that are joining me here to help us with this discussion. I'll start with the Saskatoon Police Service. I've got Sergeant Ray Robertson joining us with the Saskatoon Police Service. Ray is a member of their traffic safety unit. He's the sergeant in charge. He's also the impaired driving coordinator for the organization. Sergeant Ray Robertson, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Also, a guest who we've had here before, Constable Mike Seal, is with the Regina Police Service Traffic Safety Unit. Mike, this is, I believe, your second stint in traffic safety. Am I right?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, welcome back to the program, and great to have you both here. Ray, have you been in you've done traffic a lot of your career? Can you give us a bit of your history? Where have you worked? What is your kind of traffic safety and investigation expertise been with the Saskatoon Police Service?
Well, my traffic experience began in 2013 when I came to the traffic unit. I was doing traffic enforcement for a couple of years. Then I got interested in doing the collision reconstruction program in order to investigate fatality and life-altering injury collisions. Did that training, ended up doing traffic for 10 years, and then I continued assisting the unit and training the understudies, people that were taking over my position in 2022, still attending their crashes and helping out. During that time and during my time as a collision reconstructionist, I went into the impaired investigation sides, where I became got trained in SFST oral fluid, became an SFST instructor, and then became a DRE instructor, and then taking over the role as the impaired coordinator for the service. So all in all, 13 to 14 years of experience.
Here's what I know about cops. They love their acronyms. So I'm going to break down a couple of these. DRE, you mentioned you're DRE instructor, drug recognition expert, correct?
Correct, yes.
And then SFST is standard field sobriety testing?
Correct, yeah. Okay. They're tools in order to do impaired investigations.
Good stuff. And Mike, you were known for many years as Mike Hawkeye Seal, and you were all about the distracted driving charges. Am I not mistaken?
Yes, that's still mainly my focus, but that was the main reason I like to focus on that, just for road safety.
So in terms of traffic safety work that you've done, how long have you been in traffic? You've been a police officer how long now?
17 years.
Okay. And so you've been in traffic, how much of that?
Seven.
Okay. And specialized areas, you talked about the distracted driving. What are some of the other areas of focus for you?
I'm a level two crash reconstructionist as well. I'm SFST trained as well, and also in the oral fluid.
So when we talk about SFST, is that the roadside testing where you touch your nose, you walk the line? Mike, is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Yes.
And so that stuff is legit. Like, those are still tools that officers use to understand whether or not a person is intoxicated or impaired, I should say.
Yes, it's standardized all across North America. So the same, like, you'll see clips online from the states, and here it's all very similar. And it just helps us with drug and alcohol impairment.
So Ray, I'll bring you back into the conversation. Help us understand, when would you do the standard field sobriety tests, and when would you just get them to blow into a roadside screening device?
So when we do a traffic stop, or if we're at a check stop, or when we have suspicion to believe that they are impaired or have consumed alcohol, then obviously an alcohol only, then we'll do a roadside screen device into our roadside ASD in order to see if they have, or how much alcohol they have on in their system as from blowing into the device roadside. If we believe that, if they provide that sample and it comes to zero, and we still believe that they're impaired by something, being a drug of some sort, then obviously we can go into the standard field sobriety test in order to determine if the person is impaired, and in order to further our investigation, the standard field sobriety test and the ASD are suspicion-based tools to get you to reasonable grounds in order to go further with your investigation.
Right. So they give you reasonable grounds. They would not give you sufficient evidence for a criminal charge. Right.
No, that's it's just to get you that next level to get to reasonable grounds to believe, which then you're arrested and then obviously read the either the breath test demand or the DRE drug recognition expert demand.
So let's talk about that then, Mike. Like a drug recognition expert, when would you be doing those tests and how do they differ from that standard field sobriety testing, walk the white line, those types of things?
So I'm not trained on the DRE, the sergeant could answer that a bit better.
So, Sergeant Robertson, I'll come back to you. So what is the difference in the testing between the DRE, drug recognition expert testing, and the standard field sobriety tests?
Well, the standard field sobriety test has a horizontal gait nystagmus. It has the walk and turn and the one-leg stand. And that's designed to determine if the individual is impaired, being that they perform poorly in order to go to the next step. Once you go to the next step and being that you have reasonable grounds to believe with the DRE, then you're going through the drug recognition expert evaluation, which, again, confirms impairment both through psychophysicals and clinical indicators. And it's the totality of that investigation that will determine, yes, the person is impaired, and what category of drug they're impaired on. Not the kind of drug, but the actual street name, but the category of drug that they're impaired on, and that would then give us the grounds to continue with a charge for impaired in order to demand at that point a urine sample or blood sample for analysis.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, is if someone, if it's determined, whether it's through the standard field sobriety testing, the DRE testing, or roadside screening device where it's proved someone has alcohol consistent with what is impaired, they would be taken back or given the breath demand, taken back to the station for a breath test. When it comes to drugs, what are you doing in terms of that testing? Is it automatically either a blood test or a urine test? Is that right?
It just depends on what structure we have working with our health region. With how the SPS is right now, is that once we go through the evaluation, we determine that the individual is impaired and that we have a category of drug, then we demand the urine because it's easy to collect the urine at detention in order to send that off for analysis. It's a little bit more invasive to do request blood and get blood drawn. If we do need to go for whatever reason to blood, then we have to bring him to a hospital in order to get a phlebotomist to take that along with the particular paperwork that's involved with that.
Right. Sergeant Ray Robertson is one of my two guests, Saskatoon Police Service. I've got Constable Mike Seal with the Regina Police Service here. Mike, let's talk about, many people are under the impression that you randomly will pull people over and test them for drug. That's not the case. Am I right?
No. So at RPS, all of our traffic members, when we do our traffic stops, we do mandatory alcohol screening. But with the mouth swab, you have to have suspicion of recent use of drugs. You can't just mandatory mouth swab someone. It's different with the alcohol. Mandatory alcohol screening.
And so, I mean, it's a question I ask every time I have officers on and we're talking about this, but let's say you see no signs. You've pulled someone over, maybe you've pulled them over because of a taillight or another traffic infraction, and you see no signs of impairment. However, when you ask them, they tell you, well, I did, you know, I smoked some marijuana or I'm on medication and I took it last night. Do you automatically then do some testing for the drug, or do you still need to see the combination of signs of impairment before you would do that?
I still like to see some signs of impairment, whether it's bloodshot eyes, some sort of slurred speech, depending on what I pulled them over for, what they did to get them caused to be pulled over, whether it's blowing a red light, swerving their lane. That could also be evidence of that as well.
Right. Okay. Okay. I'll tell you what, let's take our first break because the questions are already pouring in. 1-877-332-8255. We're essentially going to go to questions for my two guests, Constable Mike Seal, Regina Police Service Traffic Safety Unit, Sergeant Ray Robertson with the Saskatoon Police Service Traffic Safety Unit. You've got traffic safety questions, rules of the road. You want to dispel a myth or find out if it's true that These are the two that will be able to help us out. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with the Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Show the Roundtable of Justice.
All I have to say is I've got traffic safety officers on the show, and the text lines go ablaze. They light up. I've got two traffic safety officers joining me today. Sergeant Ray Robertson with the Saskatoon Police Service joining me by phone. Constable Mike Seal is joining me in the studio. Mike's with the Regina Police Service. I'm going to jump to some of these texts because so many have come in. Mike, maybe I'll start with you. Black and white lane designation signs, are they mandatory? Basically, what that Paul in Regina is saying is, if you have a lane designated by a black arrow and the next lane to it is designated as a straight through, do you have to turn if you're in the lane designated by the black arrow? Like, are these traffic signs that you could get a ticket if you don't turn right, for example, out of a lane designated with the right arrow?
Yes, you can. So when they have those, it's to help flow of traffic and also to avoid accidents for people turning from the wrong lanes or going through the wrong lanes.
Right.
So yes, there is a ticket for, I believe it's for just disobeying a traffic control device.
Okay. Anthony in Saskatoon, you've got people from both Regina and Saskatoon online today. Could you ask them about tinting front windows? Is it still illegal? Because almost every third car has got blacked out front windows. Maybe Sergeant Robertson will come to you with that one.
Yeah, tinting on both front side windows is still illegal just because of safety reasons, as well as it's mandated by the Vehicle Equipment Safety Regulations Act. A lot of times we do what we can in order to enforce it, in order to have people remove it, but it's very popular. So still a lot of companies or whatnot provide a form or something to fill out knowing that it is, and then people still have it on their vehicles. It's one of those things that it's very popular, so a lot of people still want to have that on there, even though it's still illegal.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but some vehicles will come with the windows tinted. Is that right? Is there a factory, Mike? You see that factory tint?
The rear windows, yes, but the front ones is something that usually people have to put on. I think some new vehicles come with like a clear film,
okay,
to reduce road noise and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But to have the tint on there, usually it's something that aftermarket they put on.
Okay. And is it, I mean, this is the question that always follows, and I'm asking this with a smile because it's, you know, I get it. Traffic cops have to do their thing out there, but is it an automatic ticket, or could you give them, for example, an inspection ticket where they remove their tint, come in and prove that they had it removed, and then it's no harm, no foul. They don't have to pay a ticket. Is that possible, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. And we actually now at RPS, we track warnings that we give. It used to just be verbal warnings. Now we actually can give people like a printout warning. They can just throw the piece of paper away, but we keep track of if they've been warned about it before. But a lot of times they'll get a warning and then an inspection ticket, where they have to come down to the front desk and show that they've removed that tint.
Right. And if they have, then there's no ticket or anything that
yes.
follows from that. Okay. 1-877-332-8255. So this is a long question, Sergeant Robertson. It's for you. It's basically got to do with the Circle South Cloverleaf Overpass in Saskatoon, the signage there. They still have yield signs up for vehicles climbing the overpass and going to enter onto the highway. These signs were in place back when there were only two lanes of travel before the extension of the overpass. They added a third lane, but they left the yield sign up as it was there prior. Any thoughts on the signage for that, or is it still consistent with traffic rules there?
Yeah, if I'm picturing the right intersection this individual's talking about, that's on that Cloverleaf coming up the acceleration lane, and it's coming into what you call a weave zone, being that you still have two lanes of traffic or lanes of traffic heading straight, but then that lane approaches in order to go into the Cloverleaf, and which you can actually merge into the lanes of travel or stay on that roundabout in order to go northbound on Circle Drive from, I believe it's the highway to Regina. It's still a yield sign there. You're still responsible. Make sure that you're yielding to flowing traffic when trying to get into another lane. So the yield sign is still appropriate, but it is a weave zone. So, yeah, it is one of those things where a driver really has to make sure they're watching who's approaching and then how they're entering into different lanes.
All right. 1-877-332-8255. Kevin out of Saskatoon's got a couple of questions. First one, Saskatoon, I'll stay with you, Sergeant Robertson. Is the blow every stop still a thing? Kevin goes on to say, I don't necessarily disagree with this. Are you doing a mandatory roadside test with every vehicle that you stop? Ray?
It just depends, you know, if they're performing traffic stops and whatnot. And so, again, we're not mandated to do a mass sample every single traffic stop. We do have our suspicion and use a suspicion demand. So it's not mandatory, being that it's mandated that every single stop has to be like that. But we have the possibility because of the legislation, and we have the AFDs with us.
Okay. And then the next question that Kevin asks is, and Mike, maybe I'll come to you with this one, is there a time limit to issue a driving violation ticket? And then he goes on to say, the reason I ask is my daughter got a speed camera ticket last week from a violation that occurred on August the 8th.
Yes, there is a time frame. It's 6 months from the date of the occurrence you can be issued a ticket. Most often it's happening where an officer pulls you over, you get the ticket at the scene. But sometimes they give us that 6 months because if we have to go to a crash and investigate it, and sometimes those investigations be pretty lengthy with the reports, mm-hmm. they give us some extra time to be able to issue a ticket if it comes from that investigation.
This speed camera ticket, so I'm guessing in Saskatoon and Regina, you both, I'm sure they're processed out of the police service. Am I right about that?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Ray, is that the case in Saskatoon?
Yeah, correct. There's an outside company that's contracted through SGI in order to print off and issue those tickets. That's why there is sometimes a delay, but it's always before the 6 months.
Yeah, that seems long, though. August 8th, that does seem like quite a while. Okay, I'm going to go to the next question. This is from Ian in Saskatoon. Okay, so I'm laughing as I read this because there's thousands of USA videos that say you don't have to give a license and registration and your name unless a crime has been or will be committed. Is it the same rules in Canada? So, you know, you pull someone over and they say, nope, I don't have to give you my license. Mike Seal, what do you say to that?
They do. Watching those videos from the States, I know different states down there, in certain places you can't even be pulled over for being on your phone. There's certain offenses you can be pulled over for, certain you can't. Here, we have to have a legal reason to pull you over. Once we do, you're required to provide your license, registration, and provide your name. Usually when you give your license, that's just automatically giving your name.
Okay, so the person you pulled over says, you know what, I was in such a rush, I'm just going to pick my kids up, I didn't even grab my wallet, I don't have my license on me. What then do you do?
We can get their name and their date of birth. We have access to SGI, just limited, but we can pull up their name and confirm their photo that's on their driver's license, confirm that that's them. And that can sometimes result in getting a ticket for not providing your license. A lot of times it'll result in just a warning saying, make sure you have it, because sometimes people, there are emergencies, they leave and they don't think of grabbing their license because everyone just usually grabs their phone now.
Yeah. Have you encountered that, Ray? People, you pull them over and they say, I saw on TikTok, I don't have to give you my license.
Yeah, a lot of times with cell phones and smartphones, being that everybody has everything in regards to how to pay them, with contactless payments, that people are just leaving their wallets and stuff at home and forgetting to bring the driver's license. So if they provide the information, then it'd be reasonable in regards to the reasons why. Definitely we can look at that information, and it'll be up to the officer's discretion. Again, we're not all trying out there to get as many tickets as possible. So a lot of times if they're given that information, we can look it up. Then we go for warning and we keep that on track.
You're not trying to get as many tickets as possible? That's a myth that's out there, Ray.
I understand that. Again, our focus is traffic safety, to make sure that we're not only educating people, but we're also enforcing the laws as well. And again, sometimes, we give people breaks, holiday season and whatnot. And sometimes just being educated is enough in order to curb the problem in the future.
See, traffic safety members have a heart. I knew it.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Sergeant Ray Robertson, Saskatoon Police Service, Constable Mike Seal, Regina Police Service. We're only half done. Your questions, more than welcome, 1-877-332-8255. If you have a traffic safety question, text it in or give us a call and we'll get you on the air and get an answer for you when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
The Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Yes, we are in the Round Table of Justice today. We're half done and we've got two guests who are both traffic safety officers. Constable Mike Seal is with the Regina Police Service and Sergeant Ray Robertson with the Saskatoon Police Service, here to answer your questions. And they are coming in faster than I can get them out, so we're going to jump right back into it. Here's a question. Maybe Sergeant Robertson will come to you. Is there a law against using your high beam lights on your car? And if so, why is it not being enforced?
So yeah, there is a lobby in that if you're operating within in the city and you have traffic that's coming oncoming with you, you got to make sure you don't have your high beams on because you don't need to blind the other drivers that are coming the other direction. So you have a responsibility to turn your high beams off. Again, it is enforced, just whether or not the officer observes it and is able to get around to pull the vehicle over. In regards to it, sometimes it makes it tough too, is because older vehicles and newer vehicles have different intensities of lights. So a lot of times it's difficult in order to prove if it was on high beams or not, or if it's just a different product.
I've had that. I think about sometimes driving down the highway, you're passing a vehicle and you're thinking, buddy, and you give them, you know, the courtesy flick of the lights, and then they turn their high beams on to show you they were on low beams the whole time, but they were just seemed so bright. So, yeah, you've got something there. Here's a text from Carrie in Saskatoon. Maybe, Mike, I'll come to you because I don't think it matters what city. I passed a police vehicle that had very bright yellow moving lights on the back of it and bright white light on the front. I didn't know it was a police vehicle until I passed it because I was unfamiliar with the lights. What's the law when driving by a vehicle with these lights on? Do you know what that would be, Mike?
If they didn't have their emergency, like red and blue lights on, they probably, if they're passing, no one's going to give them an issue with that. It's more when you have your emergency lights on. I know the yellow lights usually are. I know some CTSS vehicles and RCMP have the, it's almost like an arrow to kind of advise you to go around them. They're pulling someone else to go to the left or go to the right if there's poor visibility.
Right.
And also the white lights on the front are usually takedown lights. So when we pull a car over, we want to illuminate the vehicle in front of us to get a good view of all the occupants. So they, if they were moving, I'm guessing they maybe just forgot to turn them off if they're moving on the highway.
Hey, I've done that. I did a traffic stop years and years ago, and I've said this many times. I'm a softie. I would have been Sergeant Robertson. You would have hated Constable Evan Bray in your traffic unit because I people would give me a reason why they were speeding, and I would let them go. I could not write tickets for the life of me. But I pulled a vehicle over once, had my lights on, talked to them, probably let them away with a warning. They drove away. I drove away casually, but I forgot to shut my lights off. And people were pulling out of the way for me. And I'm thinking, boy, people are being pretty courteous today. And then I realized I could see, I think I saw my lights in the reflection of a building. Tell me you guys have done that at least once.
Oh, at least once. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then when you realize that you had them on, you make a nice right turn to, as you're embarrassed, in order to get off that stretch of road.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, good. I feel better now. Another text here. A question. Okay, so this is back to the driver's license question. The question was, if a person has a picture of their driver's license and their registration on their phone, or is that good enough, or does it have to be the actual paper one, Mike?
So the photograph isn't enough. I know there are some places in the states that are rolling out, like putting on your Apple wallet and stuff like that, but you have to have your physical license on you. The photo, I've actually seen people that have pictures, and like if they're from out of province, we can't always confirm their photo. We only have access to SGI, and it's hard to tell whether they're actually a real photo. You can doctor that photo. You can change the expiry date if you're really good at Photoshop and stuff. So that's why we need to have the actual license.
Someone has pulled up a copy of, looks like a provincial statute saying it looks as if you've got 48 hours to produce your license. However, I heard the officer say you could be written a ticket for not having your license. Which is it?
So there's actually two separate charges under there. There's one for not providing it at the time and one not for providing within 48 hours. What used to happen a lot, I know when I started 17 years ago, people would be given a warning and come down to the front desk to provide, to show I have a license. The front desk with all like the inspection tickets we write about, window tint and
they're
different
busy.
Vehicles. They're very busy. They don't want to have, because we can confirm it now on our computer in the vehicle.
Right.
So right now it usually would either result in just a ticket there for not providing it at the scene or just a warning saying, make sure you have it in the future.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Sergeant Ray Robertson, the Saskatoon Police Service. I'm about to ask you a question that, although there's only two texts on the text line asking it, there are thousands of people wanting to know the answer. Are you ready, Ray?
I am ready.
The question from Ethna in Saskatoon is, why are drivers not charged for distracted driving with a dog on their lap?
So, again, it just comes down to if you do distracted driving or in the actual case with driving while due care and attention or reasonable consideration for others, we have to have some kind of driving evidence, being that they're not able to keep the lane or they're almost causing a collision and whatnot. So in regards to distracted driving on that aspect, we have to have other things in order to lay that charge. You could be charged with driver permitting an overcrowded driving compartment. That's another section of the Traffic Safety Act.
So It's not illegal, though. Technically, there's no charge for having your pet, like, not fastened in a vehicle. Am I right?
There's no actual section that says you shall not have an animal on your lap when operating a motor vehicle. There's other sections that can be written if the officer so chooses to.
Okay, good stuff. Let's stay on distracted driving for a second. I mentioned, Mike, we used to call you Hawkeye. Do they still call you Hawkeye?
Occasionally.
Yeah, Mike Hawkeye Seal, because you are all about the distracted driving. Here's a question from Katie in Saskatoon. A lot of people are under the impression that if they're sitting at a red light, it's okay for them to be on their cell phone. It's my understanding that if you're in traffic, you're still considered driving, therefore you should not be on your phone.
She's absolutely right. You cannot be on your phone just because you're stopped at a red light. A lot of people do it, but it's not okay. I always say to people, you still have to wear your seatbelt at a red light. You still have to follow all the traffic rules. So if you're in a lane of travel, even some people think that they're getting out of by putting their vehicle in park. Well, you shouldn't do that when you're stopped in traffic anyway. So you have to be off your phone in traffic in a driving lane.
So let's take a bit of a deeper dive into this. Let's say I use voice to text so I can phone you. And I have the ability to say to my phone, call Mike Seal, and it will phone you. Can I be holding my phone and using that voice command as I'm driving?
No, it still wouldn't be considered hands-free. So the best thing to do is, a lot of people, I know some people have Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, they can put it in a holder. But if you don't have that, buy like a mounted holder, whether it's on your windshield. You can get some that go in your older vehicles now, CD player, your vents. You can put some in your cup holder, just have it mounted somewhere so you're not holding it in your hand.
Right. How big of a problem, Ray? You still see lots of distracted driving out there?
Oh, every day. Every day we see a lot of distracted driving, whether it be from on the phone, putting on makeup, eating. There's a whole lot of different things there. They're doing a task that is taken away from the ability to operate the motor vehicle.
So the distracted driving charge, my understanding is if they're, like I heard once, and maybe Mike, it was you telling me you wrote a ticket to someone who was reading a book as they were driving. Is that a different, like, that's not under the distracted driving use of a cell phone or an electronic device. That must be a different section.
Yeah, it's under either driving without due care and attention or driving without reasonable consideration for others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1-877-332-8255. Still time to get your texts in. We're going to be talking right up till the top of the hour. Tim in Saskatoon, and Ray, I'll come to you with this one. Is it legal to make a U-turn at a lighted intersection? I see it on 8th Street all the time, says Tim.
Yeah, it's legal. You can't do a U-turn at any light-controlled intersection in the province under the Traffic Safety Act. I believe Section 235, sub 15, being that if it's controlled by lights, there's no chance it's illegal in order to do a U-turn. And yes, on 8th Street, it is a problem. It does cause collisions. A lot of different intersections that are considered high collision intersections are because of that reason.
Okay. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, more of your questions. And my question to both of you, your favorite story or stories of people trying to get out of a ticket. I know you've got them. Maybe there's even some similarities between the two of you. That's how we'll wrap up today's Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Well, the texts are flying in. My two guests, Constable Mike Seal with the Regina Police Service, Sergeant Ray Robertson with the Saskatoon Police Service. Both of these officers work in their traffic safety units. And anytime we talk traffic safety, literally, we cannot keep up to the texts. Okay, here's where I'll go next. There's a lot of people. Audrey from Estevan is frustrated with left lane drivers. So on a divided highway, what's the law if they're driving in the left lane, but they're driving very slow, basically? Is there a law there? And maybe kind of ancillary to that is the question, do we issue tickets to drivers who are driving so slow that maybe they're a hazard to people on the roadway? Mike, thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it doesn't matter whether in the left lane or the right lane. I know a lot of people, when you're on a single lane highway, there's not anywhere to go, but I see it a lot on the Ring Road and on Albert Street. There's a charge for driving at a speed that impedes the flow of traffic. So this time of year, obviously, you have to take road conditions into account. People are driving a little bit slower. It's not a bad idea because the speed limit is for ideal road conditions. But there are people that drive summertime 30, 40, 50 kilometers below the speed limit. And that is, I agree, as dangerous as people who are speeding. So I've actually pulled many people over and issued that ticket for them, saying, if you're not comfortable on the ring road, go through the city. There's a lot of different options for you.
Sergeant Robertson, there's a text here from a fellow who says he's a courier, so he's out driving all the time. And his big bug is people in the wintertime who don't properly clean off windshields, back windows, even mirrors, those types of things. Is that something you write tickets for?
Yes, there is a ticket for that, for failing to provide a clear view of both sides and rear of the vehicle. So, yeah, it is a responsibility for you to clean off the snow as well as to scrape the ice so that you have the ability to actually view what you're going into, how you're driving, as well as through the rear window.
His question, he goes on to say, if I were to provide the police service copy of my basically dash cam video, could people be charged after the fact? So if he gives you the evidence, could someone go out and lay the charge? Would you ever do that, Ray?
If they come in and lay a traffic complaint and they have the evidence and they're willing to leave a witness statement, then we'll definitely take a traffic complaint investigation and have it forwarded to a traffic officer. And then given the circumstances of the statement and everything together, then the officer is at discretion whether or not to issue a ticket or not.
Right. Okay, I want to make sure I leave time for this. I know I've still got lots of questions on the line, but you guys both have been doing this for a long time, doing traffic enforcement, writing tickets. I already said I was a softy. As a traffic cop, I was the worst. If someone gave me like even a half-assed excuse that sounded plausible, I was probably going to let them go. I want to know, what's the best story you've got, or stories of someone trying to get out of a ticket? Maybe Mike, I'll start with you.
So obviously the common one that honestly we always laugh at in the office we get so often is, I have to use the bathroom. I am rushing home to use the bathroom. Well, when we pull people over, you usually can tell that they're not being super truthful. And we always say, well, we're stopped right in front of a Tim's or McDonald's. You can go in there and use the bathroom. You can do up your ticket. It'll be just a few minutes. Another one is quite often like I'm rushing to the hospital when they're driving the exact opposite way from the hospital. It's like, well, that doesn't make too much sense. But we always have to be aware, because there are some people that, like, we hear that excuse and get used to it and kind of get just kind of
desensitized.
I had one gentleman once who's like, yeah, my friend in the back seat, he's having a medical issue. And I was like, okay, here we go. And I looked in the back seat, they're about four blocks away, and he was in the middle of like an allergic reaction. They had no idea to what, was sweating, hives. I'm like, okay, we'll get him to the hospital. Yeah. I was not expecting that. Go there, drive safely. You don't need to end up there for another reason, but get there quick.
Sergeant Ray Robertson, best excuse or story to get out of a ticket?
Yeah, the excuse, I ended up pulling an individual over. He was driving in excess of the speed limit, nothing egregious and whatnot, and talked to him, and he was pretty stressed out and looked over in his front seat. He had some pickles and ice cream. He had to get home as fast as possible because his wife was pregnant and she was having cravings. So she wanted pickles and ice cream, and he was trying to get home in order to get what she wanted.
And he actually had them on the front seat.
Yes, he did. Yep. And he was pretty stressed out, bags under his eyes, felt sorry for him. I advised him to slow down, and I didn't give him a ticket.
Wow, that's impressive. That's good. I mean, I often think, too, when you have stop checks, this time of the year we see stop checks, there's probably a lot of people that do whatever they can to avoid going through that stop check for good or bad reasons.
Yes, absolutely. When they get in there, usually we don't hear too many excuses. We just want to get out of there as quickly as possible. But I know back when I started, they used to do a lot of those stop checks here in Regina, like in the museum parking lot. And you could go out there and just watch people do U-turns at Albert 19th, just trying to avoid getting there for whatever reason, whether they didn't have a license, maybe they've been drinking, whatever. But I know now the ones that I've done this year, we're doing a lot better job at being a little bit more hidden. So it's not as obvious. So people can't turn off and they can't avoid that.
Right. Well, listen, this has been great. Sergeant Ray Robertson, first time having you on the program, but I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for what you do in Saskatoon and for the Saskatoon Police Service. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Constable Mike Seal, great to have you in. Still writing those distracted driving tickets, so keep an eye out for Hawkeye out there. Appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks, Evan.
That's been the Roundtable of Justice. We do it every Monday at 10 o'clock, and of course, we will be back for a couple more segments before Christmas of this year. Giving is down this time of year. Charities, of course, are asking for your help, especially this time of year more than ever. But a recent survey showed that one in five Canadians actually has not given in the last 5 years. We'll talk about why this trend is happening with while leader general manager of charity and donor services with Canada Helps, when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKO.